Hi all, welcome back to Not About the Weather. This is episode 7 of our little show that could. We're getting together today, this week, to talk to you about some things that we like and some things that we don't like, and we have a new person for you to meet today. So, if you haven't been listening to us for the past couple of months, Not About the Weather is a new show that grew from underneath the tree that was Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. Just a group of us who have podcasted together for a long time, getting together to do a bit more of a general pop culture commentary and personal take on life show. And we're having fun with it so far, so we're carrying on and hope you like it. We've got some good things lined up in the future, actually a couple of interview guests, which you'll hopefully really like. And today we're introducing you to a new friend in our podcasting community who may or may not come on from time to time if she has a fun time today. So it's myself, Natalie. I'm not the friend. I'm always here. Sorry. So I'm Natalie. And then Donya's here. Donya's a permanent member of our team too and of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. So hello, Donya. She's not the friend either. She's always here too. And then our new friend is Kristen. So Kristen, you may know if you listen to any of our other podcasts, she's been on Not Another Teen Wolf podcast before. She's on Rewatchable with myself and Brittany and Karen and nearly everyone who on this team who's on Rewatchable. And she lives in Karen's house, so that's a good opener as well. So hello, Kristen.
Hi. Yes, I do live in Karen's house. It's all Karen's rules.
While she's not here, yeah, let's hear some gossip.
Oh boy, I could get in so much trouble. No, I don't know. She's Karen. I mean, she's really not different than you expect her to be. She's awesome. I don't know. I'm totally bad at this, like, gossip stuff, whatever.
What's the I don't want to say worst because I don't believe that about Karen. What's the oddest quirk that you have encountered? Like, you know, oh, you fold your sheets that way, or what, you store milk in the freezer? I don't know, something.
She has Karen's a huge reader, as everyone knows. She has a million books. We've got two of her bookcases in the living room, and she's got two in her bedroom. And she organizes them by, like, she has an entire shelf that's all the books she's read. Then she has, like, three bookshelves of books she hasn't read, two of which are ones that she just hopes to, like, get to someday. And there's one in the living room of all the, like, arcs that she gets through Hypable that she has to try and, like, get done. And it's a little bit different of a way of organizing your books. And, like, she always does it alphabetically, no matter the size of the book or any of that.
Yeah.
So she's got these teeny tiny little paperbacks next to these, you know, huge hardcovers because that's how the alphabetizing works out. And it's one of those weird things because I tend to alphabetize it, but, like, I'll put all my hardcovers on one shelf or I'll do, like, by genre.
Yeah,
so, like, all of my YA will be together or something like that. Like, I have a little bit different of a system. So I thought it was interesting that she's very specific about the alphabetizing. Like, it doesn't matter what it looks like, it is alphabetized.
Does it pain you to look at?
No, I mean, it's not so bad. It's a minor grievance.
Mine are, I used to work in a bookstore, so we used to have very strict alphabetizing, but the sizing issue is also annoying. Mine have never been alphabetized. They've always been size and type. Like, you know, all, you know, random one-off novels, you know, of, you know, just modern contemporary novels on one and, you know, all, you know, series, you know, on another and stuff like that. And they'll be done by size. So that's how I do it, not alphabetized, I am planning when I eventually move into the house that I'm going to buy, which doesn't exist yet, to build a library custom made, like, to have my books fit. God. Like, either either get the entire, like, if it's a, like a long house, like a long hallway, to get built-in shelves to the hallway. I currently have shelves in the hallway, but they're like too wide for the hallway and built-ins would be narrower. Yeah. Or to convert, if there's roof space, to convert an attic into like a pull-down attic into a like creepy little hermit library. So one day,
if this happens, you need that the kind of the ladders that move on like wheels and stuff, God. So that you can do the bell thing where you like.
Yes, I don't know if it'd go be quite as impressive as that, but you know, we can dream.
Someday.
Good story. Good story about Karen. It's very cute. So if you want to get in touch with us and ask us more questions about our weird habits, you can do that. The easiest way to find us is to go to natwpodcast.com and click any of the links there to any of our social media. That's a little hub page for this podcast and Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, which shows what we do. If you do want to get in touch specifically, it's natwpodcast at nearly everything. So Twitter, we have a Facebook page which needs more attention from both yourself and us because we are really, we've never had Facebook before and now we have it and it looks really sad compared to our beautiful 10,000 strong Twitter. We have Instagram, NATW Podcast, which Karen recently posted an incredible, disgusting picture of a tongue in a jar.
A tongue in a jar.
Which I assume was a story she told on this show about something that she owns from a promotion from a network, I think. So
It was on the last episode.
Really gross.
Yeah. She promised she'd put a picture up on Instagram on the last episode when she started talking about it.
It was very gross.
It's super gross.
notaboutthe.weatherpodcast.com is actually the main website for this where the episodes get posted and you can follow that as a Tumblr account. It's a Tumblr-based server. So, that's how you can find us. Isn't that exciting? Kristen, how do you feel about being here today and our new podcasting endeavor? Has Karen secretly told you that she hated it and that I'm telling her what to do?
No, she has not told me that.
good.
Just checking. It's really good fun. Like I think the structure and like what you guys have and how you're doing the discussions, like I think it's all really interesting and fun. There's all kinds of things to hype and gripe about. And, you know, we hate to like, you know, groan on about the negatives, but you have to get it out somewhere. Venting is healthy. Hmm. So coming on here to talk about something that's driving you crazy and something that is driving you crazy in a good way is awesome. So yeah, I love it.
Cool. And I think that we also want to try and, you know, at times, I hesitate to say raise awareness because it sounds very political, but it can be. I mean, we did a whole episode about the election, which I think people might have hated, but the gripe can be anything from completely petty to something that you're like, there is a problem in the world that not people don't know about, so we're going to tell you about it or whatever. Like, for example, I think what Donya's talking about today is a pretty good example. We are usually going to talk about something that's, related to the world of media and entertainment, which is our expertise, but that it's not necessarily 100% of the time. So hopefully, if you're here for, you know, generic pop culture, you don't mind if we veer off too much sometimes. So thank you for listening so far, and we'll get started with our things that we want to talk about today. So as Kristen sort of mentioned a little bit, the main body of what we talk about is a segment that I like to call an obsession to share and a grievance to air, which is quite terrible name, but it's what we've got. So each week everyone brings basically a hype, something they want to hype up, and a gripe, something they want to gripe about, to share what they're feeling and explain it to the rest of us, basically, and for us to talk about it. Now, usually we either make a decision for a specific reason or we toss a coin to see which segment would go first. Kristen, do you actually have any preference in the structure today? Like, does one of your topics related to the other, or would you go either way?
I could go either way.
Okay. Donya?
Doesn't matter.
No, I'm fine. I can go either way as well. So I think coin toss is probably the way to go this episode.
Okay, here's my really badly done but real life actual coin toss. So, we're gonna heads. The queen is heads, and then a platypus is tails. So heads can be gripes, and platypus can be hypes because I really like the platypus. So. All right.
Yeah.
Three. I quite like the queen too. I'm not gonna lie, but I'm a bit of a I'm kind of an obsessive royalist. So I kind of like the queen. So, but that's okay. Platypus can be heads. Platypus is much less controversial. All right. Three, so two, true. One. Platypus is heads. So platypus has come up winning. So
hypes it is.
Hypes first. All right, Donya, why don't you go first, seeing as you got in here first to add this one first?
Yeah, I wasn't really sure how this one was going to go. So during the week, I went and saw a film in the cinema that was like a one-day release. So it was really, really weird. I kind of had seen an article about it on the BBC and thought, I'll give it a go. It's an animated film from Japan, and... it's basically the highest grossing movie in Japan in like the last few years, and it's basically gone crazy. So the film is called Your Name, which is really odd. when I was telling people, like, oh, what are you doing tonight, I was like, I'm going to see Your Name. And everyone was looking at me like I'd grown another head. But it was incredible. Like, I wasn't expecting to be as blown away by it as I was. I used to watch a lot more animated films, especially when I was going through university. I mean, it was what I was going to university for. So at one point, it was pretty much when I was watching movies, I was almost exclusively watching animated movies from, like, all over the world. But, I used to find, like, some of the Japanese movies, like, really different. So I used to watch a lot of them when I was going through university. And I haven't seen one in a very, 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 very long time. So I didn't know how it was going to go, because I've changed a lot in how I view media since university. Mm. So it's basically, like, a fantasy film with some time travel sort of thrown into the mix. But it basically centers around two people, Mitsuha, who is a high school girl living in a town called Itamori, and she's basically fed up with her, like, rural life, and she's what's known as a Miko, which is a shrine maiden, and she basically does a lot of, like, rituals and all sorts, and it's a family-based thing, so it goes back generations, so... And she's just tired with having to do that. And then basically on the flip side is a boy called Taki, who is a high school boy living in Tokyo, who has basically the opposite life to her. But essentially what happens in this movie is that when they fall asleep, they switch bodies. So they'll go to sleep one night as them in their own bodies, and then they wake up the next day and they've switched places. Mm-hmm. And it goes on like that for a long time with, like, hilarious kind of consequences, because obviously having a high school boy and a high school girl switching places and then trying to pick up in the middle of their lives is awkward. So they do stuff like, they leave each other notes on their phones, and at one point they're, like, writing, like, passive-aggressive stuff on each other's, like, faces. But at one point a shooting star comes, and after that shooting star comes, they stop switching bodies, and Taki can't get hold of Mitsuha anymore. And he slowly starts forgetting that things happened. And that she exists. And he gets really, really desperate. And that's when the film kind of changes tracks. And I don't want to spoil it, because it's actually
this already
really,
sounds really crazy.
And like... It's completely crazy. But it was so heartfelt and just beautifully done. And like, I didn't know how I was going to like it. But as I was watching it, at first it felt like just a slice of life coming of age kind of, with a little bit of like a fantasy supernatural kind of element thrown in. But then towards the end part of the movie, it changed tracks a little bit. And it, like, I was crying for like the last third of the movie. Like, it got me that badly. And it was really, really good. And I learned in the last day that it's actually been submitted for Oscar consideration for this year.
Aww. Yay. It sounds awesome.
Yeah, if it doesn't, because I've seen a lot of animated films this year as well. And I've seen a lot of just films in general. But this, out of all the films I've seen this year, this is the one I've enjoyed the most from start to finish.
Mm.
So I feel like if it doesn't actually get the Oscar nomination and win, there's something wrong, because it was really good, even just as a film. It was just so well done.
And I assume you watched it with subtitles, or was it dubbed?
No, I thought it was going to be with subtitles, but that was the other thing that threw me, is that it was actually dubbed. But in this instance, the dub wasn't bad.
Yeah, I'm learning very rapidly this week that there is like extreme elitism about anime fans between subs and dubs. Which if I'd put any thought into it, I probably would have been like, yeah, okay, but this week I'm hearing a lot about it.
It wasn't bad though. Because some of them are like terrible. And I think that's where the elitism came from, when anime fandom sort of started out and they were dubbing it to get it more mainstream and to more people. Like, the dubs were done really cheaply and as quickly as possible, and they were just really over the top and kind of bad. And they also didn't bother with properly translating the content. So you would have like really weird moments that just weren't translated properly, that just threw you out of the actual animation and the show. So that's where I think the elitism came from, is that then people were seeking out the originals and realizing that they were so different. But in this instance, the dub, it was actually very, very well translated. At points when it was very much moments that, if you weren't familiar with Japanese culture, could have been things that you wouldn't understand very well, they actually translated it well enough that it was easy for anyone to pick up on, even with the culture differences. So they did a very, very, very good job. And the actual voice actors for this, who I'm actually not sure who they were, I don't recognize the names, but that's possibly because I'm not as up on like voice actors as I used to be when I was at university, but they were actually pretty good. So for a dub, it was great. I would love to see it in Japanese, because Japanese as a language also has masculine and feminine pronouns. So it obviously would have made a difference when they were switching bodies, because when they were in each other's bodies, they would have probably been using the pronouns that they were used to. And people, that's where a lot of confusion would come in from like their friends and stuff, because it would be the wrong pronouns. So it's like things like that may be different. So I'd be interested to see it in Japanese as well. But, like, just, it was so good. It blew me away. I've kind of, like, been sitting, because I saw it on Thursday, and I'm still, like, sitting here thinking about it. It was, like, that good. And this is Sunday. We're recording on a Sunday. So it's been a few days, and I'm still thinking about it.
There's nothing better than a movie that you aren't expecting anything from that just blows you away. Like, there's nothing better than that, because you walk into the theater, it's a movie, you know, you're not really expecting huge things. It's not Doctor Strange or, you know, Fantastic Beasts, where you walk in with expectations one way or another. Like, you know you're going to hate it, or you know you're going to love it, or whatever. When you walk in and you're just like, okay, I'm seeing this movie, it sounds good, you know, I don't really know much about it, and it just becomes something that you, like, you know, that you love, that is one of those, like, very rare experiences these days that I absolutely love when it finally comes about. It's just, that's awesome.
Yeah, I'd say, Donya, actually, the last time I had an experience like that where I saw a movie that I knew that I wanted to see, but I did not know that it was going to fuck me up, basically, was Pride.
Oh my god.
And that I was just like, I came out of it and I was just like stuck with it for about a month, just being like, oh my god, I can't believe this movie.
Happened to me after that movie as well, because so much of it was based in South Wales as well, and around the miners' strike, and I grew up hearing stories about that from my granddad, and then actually seeing some of it, like, playing out on screen alongside, like, other things that mean so much to me. Like, I was a mess watching that film. Oh, my God.
Yeah, see, I kind of knew nothing. Like, I knew very vaguely what it was, but it was not anything I had any history in, and it was just, yeah, just ruined me. But this movie, I've just looked up, it's showing in quite a few places in Sydney. We have a lot of Asian culture here, a lot of Asian immigrants, and a lot of different communities from different parts of Asia that, like, so we get a lot of, I wouldn't say, like, a lot of anime films in cinema, but, like, there are periods of time when there is, and this has actually got quite a lot of showings this week, okay, so perhaps I'll be able to see it.
I would recommend it. I would definitely recommend going to see it. It was a surprise as a film. It's a little, it had, like, fantasy elements and the way that time travel always happens as well, and body switching stuff. You can expect that that's a little bit off the wall, but it's grounded enough in, like, real human emotion and, like, reality that it worked very, very well. More so than some other films that I've seen that have attempted it.
Do you think that it would work, like, translated not just to a Western cartoon, but, like, say they wanted to make, like, a live-action movie of this?
Yeah.
Yeah? Because when you were describing it, I was kind of, like, seeing it in, like a Western live-action movie adaptation. I was like, that story, I feel like, could work very well, but I don't know if the end result of the story is something that, like, is not the normal trope for Western audiences, or whether they just go with it anyway.
It may be difficult to, like, westernize it in regard to so much of it is very specifically about certain aspects of Japanese culture.
Okay.
That would be really hard to westernize. But I could definitely see a live-action version of this easily. Yeah. But, like, to give an idea of, like, the numbers that it's doing, in Japan on its own, because it hasn't had a wide enough release overseas yet to get a good idea of the number, but in Japan alone, it surpassed the 8th highest grossing film, which was Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, which made 17.3 billion yen. It's also surpassed, it's the 4th highest grossing Japanese film in Japan right now, and it's coming up on the 3rd, which is Spirited Away, which made 30.8 billion. Howl's Moving Castle, which made 19.6 billion, and Princess Mononoke, which made 19.3 billion. It is currently projected that it's going to approach 20 billion yen, which, to put it in perspective, that's about 200 million US dollars.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and it's been open 77 days in theaters in Japan. It's made $172 million so far.
That is crazy. And you just saw it in the newspaper. Did you go by yourself?
I went with a friend. Basically asked, oh, do you fancy catching a film after work? And he was like, yeah, sure, why not? So we went and saw it together. And it was actually, because I live in a town called Basingstoke, which really, for something like this, you wouldn't expect a lot of people to show up to. It's very
niche.
It's a very niche thing to go and see, but the cinema was packed. Like, it was almost completely sold out, which, like, I've seen huge films like Star Wars and the Marvel movies not even fill a quarter of a cinema screen in Basingstoke, and this one pretty much packed out its whole screening. So
now I'm really curious.
Yeah.
Okay, so Kristen, just before we move on, was what you described with the films, was there any that particularly stick out for you like that, that you went in like being like, okay, a movie, and came out being like, my life is over or something like that?
One of those questions. The most recent example that I can think of right now is Pete's Dragon from this summer. I grew up, you know, that musical, it was a musical, the original musical, it's terrible. But growing up, it was like one of our favorite movies. Like, just the whole idea of the, you know, the invisible dragon and all of that. It was so overplayed in my house, I can't even begin to tell you. And I was reviewing movies for Hypeable this summer, and I was like, you know what, I'll go see Pete's Dragon. Like, I didn't expect anything out of it, and the story they ended up telling is dramatically different from the original movie, but it still has the same bones. Like, it's still the same idea and the same, like, the reality of this dragon and his little boy that, like, protects him, and that they kind of protect each other. And it was really, really cute, and they did an amazing job with the adaptation. It really was more of like a reimagining than an adaptation, but it just, yeah, that movie affected me way more than I thought it was going to. And I walked out of the theater and was like, wow. Okay. So yeah, that just happened. So yeah, that's probably the most recent.
That's cute. I have not seen that one either, but artist I really like a songwriter that I really like did the soundtrack for it, so perhaps I will have to check it out at some point.
It's really beautiful, too. It's all, like, the Pacific Northwest of the United States, so it's all green and lots of trees, and, yeah, so they're just really pretty to look at, too.
And is it live action with an animated dragon, or is the whole thing animated?
It's live action with, like, It's an animated dragon, but it's not nearly the kind of animation that with the original. Like, it's so lifelike, it's you barely tell it's really animation. Yeah. But it's
like real, it's really human people, real world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's Bryce Dallas Howard and Robert Redford and Carl Urban's in it. Aww. But like the kid's an unknown, but like all the parents are people I recognized, and yeah, it was really cool.
Cool. Okay, well, I will do mine next, I think. Because, Kristen, I'm not sure if your two, your hype and your gripe, are they related to one another? Like, do you want to feed one into the other?
They can be, yeah. But they don't necessarily have to be either.
It seemed like they might be related. So my what I'm stoked about this week is actually a band called Crowded House.
Okay, which is the band.
I have no idea if you guys know who this band is or not. So Crowded House were a famous band in the 90s from New Zealand. Got very big in New Zealand and Australia. Australia tends to, like, say things are theirs when they're actually from New Zealand. Until they do something wrong, like, and then we're like, no, they're from New Zealand, they're not from Australia, like Russell. But it's a very common joke here, but yeah. Anyway, so they were very big here, very, very big here and in New Zealand. And they might have crossed over a little in the 90s. They have some songs that are, like, known on classic rock stations as, like, universal you know, universally known songs. They've had, I think, probably the biggest one that would be known is Don't Dream It's Over, which has been used in a lot of advertising campaigns and was also done on Glee. there is some crossover, but I'm not sure how much, like, American or British exposure would be to them.
British exposure would be pretty big. My dad was a huge fan of them when I was growing up.
That's really random.
Yeah. I used to listen to them a lot with my dad, which is why I was like, when you put this in the doc, I was like, is this Crowded House the band?
Kristen, have you ever heard of them? It's okay to say no. I'm just curious about the crossing over of the streams.
No, I definitely know Don't Dream It's Over, okay. But I had no idea that this band existed.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, yeah, so that's them. I think a lot of people, Don't Dream It's Over has been pretty universally used in a lot of things, but they're a very, they're a very very good band that I've sort of grown up with. Everyone in Australia really has. Basically, 20 years ago, so they were kind of big in the 90s. The guys are like in their 60s now, so they were big in the 80s and 90s. And in about, I guess it was 20 years ago, so 1996, they at kind of the semi-top of their game, they kind of were like, okay, we're going to take a break now, we're going to quit now, or whatever. And they did this a tour called Farewell to the World, and they finished it by playing a farewell gig on the steps of the Sydney Opera House. You guys know what the Sydney Opera House is, presumably. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is one of the most famous concerts that's ever happened in Australia. Like, one of those iconic kind of, like, I don't know, like Queen at Wembley. It's obviously not that big, but, like, it's big for Australia. It's a big memory in Australian history and stuff like that. And so it was 20 years ago on the 24th of November, I guess that was. And they've kind of done stuff since then. I've seen them at a couple. I've seen... The main guy is a guy called Neil Finn, and he's got a brother called Tim Finn, and they have done stuff together as the Finn brothers, like, and since then. And I've seen Crowded House in a concert before. Like, they've done reunions and albums and stuff, but they're kind of, like, a constantly, not massively successful, but, you know, like, they're constantly maintaining band, at least after their initial breakup. But for the 20th anniversary of that concert, they got together to do another one, like, on the steps of the Opera House, like, to recreate it. Not recreate it, like, the same set list and stuff, but as a tribute to that, because it's huge. And that Crowded House on the steps of the Opera House show, like, the original, is like, you know, like, it was on television all the time, or, like, you could see an image from it and you, like, knew what it was. Like, it was very, very big in Australian mindset. And so they basically played, they ended up announcing, I think, one or maybe two, and now they stretched it to four concerts, again, on the steps of the Opera House, in the Opera House forecourt, as an anniversary thing. And so that's kind of been the talk of the town, because I live in Sydney, and that's kind of been the talk of the town for the past week. And if I'd had more forethought about my life, I probably would have tried to go, though it sold out very, very quickly. Usually I am really on the ball with going to events that I want to go to, but yeah, it's been weird lately. And it's not like, they're not like one of those like bands, like a lot of the bands and a lot of the things that I like these days, like actors or whatever, a lot of that is invested in like who the people are, not what the work is, if you know what I mean. It's like, I care about them because of their story and who the people are. These guys, I don't really know anything about, except for they had one of the guys died a while ago, which was quite sad. But I really just like their music because I grew up with it. And they broadcast the final show, which was last night, on ABC, like on Free Hour, which is not the same as your ABC in America, Kristen. It is a free-to-air, like government-funded. So it'd be more like your PBS, basically. So it's the government funded, like, kind of sort of equivalent to the BBC public channel, and they broadcasted the concert on that. And so I watched it last night, and I literally watched it because I heard next door, like, through the window. I was like, I could hear, like, song and I could hear like crowd singing. I'm like, that's live. Are they broadcasting it on television right now? And I turned my TV on and they were. So that was really fun. And it was just really, there was all these tweets going up on the screen from people all over Australia, like having emotions. And it was really, yeah, it was just a really, really good experience. And it really, like, they're kind of like a constant that I can throw back to and listen to at any time. I used to listen to them a lot when I was working in this one shop. And there was one tweet that came up right at the end of the concert that was, I was just like, oh my God, this is like exactly what I'm trying to process, which was like someone on screen had said, like, they shaped our lives even though we didn't realize it at the time. And I think that that is like exactly what I was feeling at the time. And I really, yeah, I really had a, ironically, I have a Crowded House tea towel. Like when I went to like a gig of theirs quite a few years ago, I was like, I don't want to buy a t-shirt. Because I have too many shirts. They have a tea towel. I'm going to buy the tea towel. I was like, I wish more people did tea towels as merch because I don't need the shirts. But, you know, like tea towels are actually useful. And I was actually using the Crowded House tea towel that already that week and then they watched the gig. And I don't know. Yeah, they have one particular song called Distant Sun, which is probably one of my favorite songs of all time. It's the number one song that I wish had been written about me. Like, I'm like, if someone could write me a song, I'll be like, that song. That is the one that I feel like someone would write about me. But, yeah, it was just a really good experience of, like, and I think, like, for the nation, if you know what I mean. Like, it was a really, really good experience and a really cool thing to see. And weird, because I remember the 20th anniversary. I remember the original concert. Like, I would have been 10. Like, and I don't remember it, but it's, like, kind of hazily there as one of the first things I would remember at all about pop culture, like kind of that significance. So it was a good experience and I was really, really excited, kind of excited but in like a very placid and calm and right way about this. So yeah, it was good. It was really good. It brought the nation together. I feel good about it. so you guys should go and listen to them if you haven't. They have a lot of best of albums. I also have a fantastic album of theirs called She Will Have Her Way. It's not an album of theirs, it's an album of Australian women artists covering their songs, and so that's one I listen to a lot as well. But yeah, they're really, really good, and it gave me a lot of feelings. And I was just wondering as well, because I saw a little while ago, and this is a lot sadder, but the Canada had something like this recently. Canada had a live broadcast of a concert of a very, very famous Canadian band, one that hasn't particularly crossed over to the rest of the world that much either, but that everyone in Canada is really emotional about, called The Tragically Hip. But that was happening because the guy in it is, like, dying of a brain cancer. Like, he is going to die very soon. And yeah, and that concert I know was broadcast on the CBC. And this is like this, and the I saw like the way that was reacted to by everyone who was in Canada or had been Canadian, was Canadian whether they were living there or not. And it just seemed like a really emotional moment for the entire country. And no one is dying here, but it was a similar vibe, but less sad. So I really like those moments that kind of stop the nation, if you know what I mean, for a good reason.
Yeah. It's kind of, I used to be obsessed. The song that I used to be obsessed with by them was Weather With You.
Yeah.
I used to sing that all the time when I was a kid. I used to love it so much. So it's kind of like my heart feels like it's grown like 3 sizes bigger. I'm just like, they're going, oh, this is so nice, Australia, what?
Yeah. Have you guys, I don't know, I'm trying to think of like the last thing that like I've seen stop the nation in the UK or in America. Unfortunately, it's mainly been like horrible political things. I'm trying to think of the last thing that like stopped the nation in positive way for you guys.
I can't think like band wise. I can't think. Anything. I know the one that did like for like me and my dad, but it was like years and years and years ago, is when Pink Floyd did their reunion. Mm. And for me and my dad, we were watching that live on TV, and we got very emotional about that. But for me, that was the last big one that I can think of that affected me personally, because like my dad was such a huge fan of them. Like, he went to so many of their concerts when they were still together. And so I picked up through him, like, all of his music taste, which, yeah, meant that that was a huge thing for me. But I'm trying to think of, like, anything else.
In general, the BBC, you know, airs stuff like Glastonbury and Reading and Leeds live. Yeah. So even if it's not, like, a big deal, there are those moments where, you know, everyone on, you know, on Twitter or whatever is actually communing with a live event while it's happening, as opposed to like, oh, we're all watching this show or whatever, you know. And I guess like it happens with sports, but that's how most people engage with sports. Kristen, is there any live events that are broadcast often in the States that like everyone, or not everyone, but like, you know, everyone of a certain generation or a certain culture watches that's not sports, or is it only sports?
Well, I was racking my brain trying to come up with something because, yeah, I mean, mostly sports. The thing, like, the Olympics came to mind because those are always a pretty big gathering place. Yeah. The last, I'm trying to think if there are any, especially, like, musical events that, like, people took time to, like, appointment TV for. Like, you know what I mean? Like, made a point to check out the live broadcast for, and nothing is really coming to mind. Maybe award shows, nowadays it's more than just watching the actual award show itself, like watching the red carpet coverage and watching these people like that's the only other thing I can come up with at all, is like watching arrivals and stuff like that. It's sad, but I can't think of anything live that's really been a whole nation stopper, like,
because a lot of people, like, with the UK, like, it's not everyone. It's probably not as universal as something special like this gig was. But a lot of people in the UK, like, if they're not going to Glastonbury, will turn on the television and watch the Glastonbury coverage. And it's literally, you know, while it's happening. So, you know, you're watching whoever's playing. And I've never heard of that in America, like, for any of the, like, big music events or anything like that.
Yeah, typically they're like, you have to be there, you know, like there's a lot of
money for the ticket.
Yeah, like, you know, yeah. I mean, there's a million music festivals and they're all over like the country. You can go to ones in Tennessee or California or the Pacific Northwest or wherever. There's a million of them, but it's, you have to go, you have to be there. Like, there isn't usually a way for the entire nation to kind of be a part of.
Actually, I'll tell you what I've noticed it with the most in the States recently. It's just come to me. It's when they do the live musicals. Like, you know, like Grease
or
whatever.
Yeah.
That's what I've noticed it with in the USA. Those live events. So maybe there should be more live events, you know. Maybe more live events should be broadcast on television, because it really does bring people together, like, in a whole, like, we're all going to talk about this and commentate it. And, it, like, because it's just, like, a one-off thing. It's not like, oh, did you catch that show or whatever. It's a one-off thing. And I think that, yeah, when the live events have happened, the live musicals, Grease and Rocky Horror, and, like, there's been a few over the past few years, like Sound of Music and various ones.
The Wiz.
Yeah, I think those have been really, and it's not everyone, because not everyone in the world is interested in Broadway, you know? Like I feel like a classic band that everyone grew up with is a bit more like, you don't really have to be that intense about it to be like, yeah, this is great, I'm going to have a beer, you know. Broadway's a bit more niche. But those are, at least in the community that I watch on the internet, those have been the most most similar to that, I think.
Yeah, the other thing that just now came to me was Beyonce's, like, video album from this year.
Yeah, that's true.
That was kind of massive, you know, all it was its own thing, and it debuted on HBO, and everybody watched it at the same time. So it's not live, but it was kind
event
of the same idea.
Television,
yeah.
Interesting. Well, yeah. So that's me. That's what I did last night, and it was really nice. Kristen, do you want to talk about your thing, and then if you like, we can go into your we can go like mirror order. We can go like you, and then me, and then Donya, because I think mine will come off the back of yours a little as well. So,
sure.
Go ahead with your happy making thing.
Yes. So I, like much of the world, am obsessed with Gilmore Girls. I didn't watch it when it originally aired. Mm. I basically caught up with it when ABC Family started running reruns a couple years ago, and I mainlined the whole series, and since then I've rewatched it, you know, a million times. And so I was kind of two minds about this reboot. Like, it's not really a reboot, it's like a continuance, but I was kind of two minds about it, because how do you really recapture the magic of something like that? Like, the show was its own animal, and it very much kind of existed in a time that I don't think can be recreated truly. But I was really, really hesitant about these four episodes. I almost didn't want to watch them this weekend. I wanted to, you know, put it off and not think about it. But last night I got home from work, and I was basically confronted with a large portion of time in which I was like, you know what? I should just at least start them and see how it goes. And the first episode, which was an hour and a half, they did it winter, spring, summer, and then fall. Mm-hmm. And winter, the first one, like, it was everything I was worried about. Like, I was so taken aback by, like, how people look now, because they all look very different. I mean, especially Lauren Graham, who I love. But, like, this is, I think it's been 10 years since the series ended. So, like, she is in her probably late 40s, early 50s now versus when she made the show. So that's a pretty dramatic difference in terms of, like, the time in your life when you change a lot physically, like, what you look like. And so I felt like in the first episode that they really messed with her makeup and her hair and her face. Like, it almost felt like they were trying to make her look younger, and as it wore on, you saw the character come out of her again rather than the person they were trying to make look like the character again. And the last three episodes were fantastic, and it really did end up capturing exactly what you want it to, and it was really great. But that first hour of the first episode was kind of rough for me, and I was like, I'm not sure if I'm gonna be able to make it through all of this. But, you know, it's one of those things that it is kind of a communal experience, you know, tagging off of Natalie's, like, those that love the show, those that love everything it brought and everything that it kind of is, it's almost a group experience to watch it on Netflix all in one lump, and, you know, and be one of the ones in the know that knows the final four words and all the secrets that they've been so careful about. And yeah, it ultimately was good. I'm glad I watched it. I'm glad that it exists. And that's more than I thought I was going to be able to say. So it was good.
But conceptually, like, do you kind of want everything you've loved, like, if everyone involved in a thing that you loved wanted to do more of it for the right reasons, if you know what I mean, and not that everyone was giving you, like, a bad attitude because of money or something like that, would you want this kind of revisitation for everything that you love, or is there anything that you'd be like, no, I don't want you to touch it, just go away?
I don't think it works for everything. It worked here, thank goodness, and I think part of that comes from the set being, like, pretty iconic, but it's basically the entire WB backlot. Like, it all exists. They just dress it up for other things. Like, yeah. it is still there. I saw it 2 years ago now when I went on the tour. It was very much still there, even, you know, 8 years later. I don't think it works for everything. It has to be the right thing to make it work. I have all kinds of love for Smallville, which aired about the same time as Gilmore Girls on the WB, or, mm-hmm. yeah, the WB at the time. And I couldn't imagine them trying to touch that show again. Like, it would be crazy to, like, first of all, it's, you know, it's comic book related. So you'd have the whole, like, Superman problem. and I don't think they'd ever want to go anywhere near that. But, like, I can't imagine coming in on a show that was basically about, like, teenagers and them, like, coming to terms with who they are and growing up and all of that. I can't imagine stepping in now and, like, trying to see where they are 10 years later. Like, that would be so weird.
I'm just trying to, I'm imagining, like, a late 30s Glee and crying.
No.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
No one would do that for the right reasons either. Everyone would be like, give me that Ryan Murphy money. I don't know.
Yeah, like, or like Dawson's Creek, which I also loved. But I can't imagine revisiting those characters 10 years after the fact and, like, caring at all. Again, Gilmore Girls is, like, it's a cult thing. Like, people that love it, and they are, you know, constantly referencing it. It's kind of like Buffy in the following that it has.
It's like a touchstone to their life and their dialogue, and,
So I can't imagine it would work with everything, but, you know, in some instances it does work, and this happens to be one of them. I think a large portion of that can be credited to the original creator and writer for the series coming back. Like, she was the one who wanted this. She wanted to be able to finish the series and you, like, kind of end it the way she wanted, since they were forced to step away a year before it ended. So I think that's a huge part of it. And if, you know, if a creator has something more to say, then it will probably work. But if it's coming from anyone else, there's probably going to be issues.
I'm trying to think if there's anything I'd want to catch up on, if you know what I mean, like drop into again. Honestly, the one that I'm thinking of is not even a full series. It's like a mini series that I feel like that we didn't get enough of, and that dropping in 10 years later to see what those people are doing and how it's progressed would be fantastic is Political Animals.
My God, I thought that's where you were going, and I was like, please say it. Please
I feel
say
like
it.
That Political Animals, which I'm not sure if you've seen, Kristen, is so, you know, it ends...
Timely.
Yeah.
For right now.
Well, it is very timely, yes. But it ends on a place, something big is about to start happening. Basically, it's about, you know, this... It's almost Hillary Clinton's story, like quite a few years before Hillary started doing her thing, which is that it's like a woman who is used to be the first lady of a very popular president, like in the 90s, who has done her own political career and been Secretary of State and wants to run for president. I think she loses her first attempt at a primary, basically, and then... is the Secretary of State for that president. So, again, very similar to Obama and Hillary, on when Hillary tried to run the primary on her first term, on Obama's first term, I believe. And it basically ends with her, you know, potentially trying to run again, or she makes a deal, I think she makes a deal with that current president to become the VP instead of Secretary of State, and then he dies. Basically, the president who she had the good relationship with dies in a plane crash. So it leaves at a point where, okay, an election's coming up and she is going to run. And she has, you know, these twin sons who both handle the, you know, their life, you know, as the first sons very differently. And it's just such a great, like, small series. Like, there's so much in it, but I feel like by dropping into that family, like 10 years later, if she is the president or whatever, could be really really, really good. And I'm not just saying that because Sebastian Stan's in it. I swear to God.
Yeah.
I just checked it out on IMDb and I was like, oh, I see. I know why.
No, it's not why. I had this series before The Winter Soldier was a thing, FYI. Like, it's really good. Like, okay. it's a Greg Berlanti show. Like, and he is very busy doing other things that are more superhero related. But yeah. It's really good, and I feel like that dropping into that for like a TV movie or another 6-episode miniseries would be really awesome. But yeah, I'm trying to think.
I mean, any other just shows. sitting here now, I wouldn't mind a check-in with like West Wing. Which that show is, again, it's one that I love. Like, I feel like that kind of, when there's a cast of characters that's very like insular and like you can check in on them. You could see them getting together for a holiday or for some, big event, and all of these people being present in the same place and like seeing how life has progressed for them would not be a stretch.
Yeah.
Like, I could totally get into that. Whereas some of the shows, like, these people will never be in the same place again. Like, there's no reason for them to be. But like West Wing, you could come up with a reason for that whole cast to show up and for people to kind of, pop in and out. And that would be cool. I would definitely be game for that.
I would also literally always take more Smash, but that's never going to happen, so.
Oh, whatever. Yeah, I know.
Whatever.
I love Smash.
I don't know. I don't know what else I would take, but I'm glad that it worked for the Gilmore Girls, as I know it meant a lot to a lot of people, I guess.
Yeah, I've been watching from outside the bubble going, wow, this has been a crazy weekend for people.
Until the last couple of years, I did not know that people were this obsessed with this show. I thought it was like a really, like, I thought it was like a daytime television, like, show that people, like, no one cared about, but I did not know that it had this kind of, like, subculture passion thing at all until a couple of years ago. I really thought it was just, like, a Seventh Heaven type, not that I watched quite a lot of Seventh Heaven, actually, but, but I thought it was that kind of thing of, like, a, wholesome, daytime, Seventh Heaven aired normally when it first came out, but one of those kind of daytime repeat family dramas. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought Gilmore Girls was until like a couple of years ago when all y'all started like losing your shit, basically.
When they did their reunion at ATX, it kind of like stirred everyone up and was like, wait, what? Why? What are they doing? What's going on? So, yeah.
Oh. Everything I know about Gilmore Girls, I learned from an AU fanfic.
Really?
Yeah, really. Oh, I read a fanfic that was very loosely based on the premise of Gilmore Girls, and that's all that I know.
In what fandom?
Teen Wolf, believe it or not.
Really? That's amazing.
I'll see if I can dig it up for you and find it again. Considering the Teen Wolf fandom and fanfic is, like, insane, like, there are so many fics, I will try and dig it back up again, but,
I'm going to look out for that. I'm sure someone listening might be able to find it for us. Teen Wolf is not even over yet. However, that is one that I can imagine just given the bond of the cast and the creator, I can imagine if they wanted to, like, in 10 years do a drop-in, that it would come from the right place, if you know what I mean. I don't know if it would, it would work or not, but I think that it would come from the right place if they ever did that, so.
Agreed.
I'd agree with that as well.
Kristen, do you want to carry on to your gripe this week? Because I feel like it might be related to your Gilmore Girls watching, or maybe not.
Yes, it's kind of a general gripe. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with Gilmore Girls. I was not spoiled. And my gripe more comes from, I wish that I wouldn't have been forced to watch all four of these episodes of Gilmore Girls back to back to back in order to avoid the spoilers. Like, I knew, I've been checking Twitter since it came out on Friday, like, at work or whatever, and been so, like, worried that I was going to scroll past a spoiler for this or that, that I wasn't, you know, I wasn't really looking at it. Like, I was trying to keep up with stuff, but also at the same time not. And it happens to me every week that I work nights, so I miss live TV. I watch everything on DVR or, like, the next day online. And so I don't, I'm used to having things spoiled for me, at least the big stuff. Like, I'm almost never fully surprised because while I'm at work, like, I'll be on my phone for something and not looking for spoilers, but people can't seem to help themselves. And it makes me crazy. It's like, you know, 24 hours. Just give people 24 hours before you word for word state a spoiler on Twitter. Like, this just don't state it.
Is why I love Twitter. I really do. It's the only development in social media that I really truly love. I love a lot of things that we've done for it. Like, that it's done for media, for pop culture, for the de-pedestaling of, like, celebrities and all that kind of stuff. However, this is what live journal communities are for. This is what you make a post and everyone freaking live blogs in the comments. And if you're not wanting to get spoiled, you don't go in that community that day, but you can still check the rest of your fucking feed. And so this is why, you know, like, I don't, like, there should be, like, and you can't be like, okay, every single person on Twitter, let's go to this chat room. But one thing about social media that has changed is that more people, like, every Joe Blow on the street is, like, now on social media, so they're all engaging on more of, like, a fandomy level, even if they don't realize it. Like, they're all, you know, if they're watching something live and tweeting about it or whatever, rather than just being, like, the intense people who are actually finding the places fandom are on LiveJournal or something like that. But this is exactly, like, you know, if you're going to live vlog spoilers of something, then, yeah, like, it is really great to engage with other people while watching live. But we used to have the resources to do this when it was just fandom, you know, when it wasn't everyone on social media, when it was just fandom, there were much easier resources to do that, you know? And now it's like, well, everyone's just in the public marketplace screaming, and it's like, you know?
So. Yeah. Well, and you can react to what's going on screen without restating what the spoiler is in on your Twitter feed. Like, you can talk about, I can't believe that happened. This is, you know, there are ways to, like, experience it and live tweet it or whatever without expressly trying to ruin someone's day. Like, I feel like that's half of, you know, the people on Twitter who are just happy to, you know, type spoiler after spoiler, it's because they know that people don't want to know, and it's fun to, you know, put that tweet out there.
Really? People have that attitude?
It's pitch schadenfreude, man. They just, like,
I would never think like that. That's, wow, that's horrible.
It's like the guy who went past in a car and read the end of Harry Potter, right? Yeah, so it's... Yeah.
What a dick. Like, how many people are that horrible?
I've been spoiled for Fantastic Beasts. I haven't seen it yet.
I got a major spoiler by J.K. Rowling for Fantastic Beasts. After all her bullshit about keeping the secrets for Cursed Child, she's retweeting Fantastic Beasts spoilers already. And I'm like...
Hashtag Wormtaily.
So the Zoe Kravitz character that it has the reveal, I assume that that's a spoiler towards the end of the movie, the reveal of who she is or her last name. I haven't seen it yet. Kristen, have you seen it?
I've seen it twice, actually. It's not really a spoiler. Like, it kind of is an offhanded comment that's thrown in the middle. We honestly don't know much about her.
Okay. Well,
we learn her name, but it's not, we don't get much more than that.
I got spoiled for that entire fact. I don't know what the big twist at the end is, though. So that's at least.
I know that.
I don't.
That's the bit I got spoiled for.
Now I want to know. Because I don't care. Like, I'm just so mad. Like, oh, J.K. Rowling, we've already had an episode talking about your problems. But yeah, she retweeted a fan art of that character with that character's name. Like, a couple of... And I'm like, okay, so you're so anal about the Cursed Child spoilers, but the movie, like, you don't give people, like, a week or whatever to watch it? No? Okay. So, anyway... I'm not spoiled for that end twist of Fantastic Beasts. I haven't seen it yet.
And I will also say that it's killed any, like, desire that I may have had to go and see it.
Now I want
to
know what it is. Okay, maybe I'll just go and see it this afternoon. Ugh, I'm really stressed about it. Anyway.
I will say Eddie Redmayne is absolutely enchanting.
I love him. And it's so annoying.
And... there's a specific magical creature that is just adorable and just stole the show for me. So it is really sweet, even if there are things about it that you might not love. I understand, Danya. I really understand. But there's a lot going on in that movie that's really charming and fun. And, you know, give it a shot. It's not – I really liked it. I've seen it twice. You know, it's a good time. It's a good time at the theater.
Oh, all right. I mean, I will have to see it. I'm like, I just was not, like, rushing out the door to see it. I don't know. I'll work it out. So, yeah, spoilers on Twitter. I don't know, what's the worst thing you got spoiled for in the past due to this behavior?
Basically anything that's ever happened that's really awesome on Flash or Arrow.
Really?
Every time something big happens, I know about it before I get home. Or, like, the death on How to Get Away with Murder, a show I cover.
Oh, we're going to talk about that later in this episode, actually.
Okay, well, yeah. They had a massive death, and
I got
spoiled on it.
In the finale, right? The mid-season finale just now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I got spoiled on it because somebody on Twitter thought it would be funny to just put it out there. And I'm like, why? Why do you have to ruin people's day? Like, why?
I got spoiled for the post-credit scene of Civil War, of the fact that Bucky refreezes himself. So that made me very stressed about, like, what was coming in the, like, about what the emotional state of the movie would be like if he ended up making that decision. And it actually turned out to be not as depressing as I thought it was going to be, but I got spoiled for that, and so I was not very happy about that.
I'm trying to think what the biggest thing I've been spoiled for was. I mean, obviously the Fantastic Beasts one was a pretty big spoiler, and that was the most recent, but I think there have been a couple of times where I've been spoiled for The Flash by virtue of the fact that I'm in a completely different time zone, so I can't see the episodes until I get home from work.
That was me and Bake Off. That was me and, like, being like, okay, I'm getting off Twitter. I think I got vaguely spoiled for the Bake Off winner. I think, like, I saw, like, people tweeting in a way that was very implying who won.
Yeah. Though you've said that now, I was away in New York Comic Con and wasn't able to watch that episode that aired that week because I was seeing Hamilton and then was basically going straight into full-on New York Comic Con mode, so I literally could not fit seeing the episode in. And a friend of mine from the States who also watched it, she usually, like, messages me when she's watching it, and I didn't realize my phone was going off and there were these messages because I was doing, like, interviews and the stuff that you do at New York Comic Con, and I came back and checked my phone and there was just all of the spoilers for that week's Bake Off, and I was like, they're going,
oh no,
no.
I've actually taken to getting off Twitter on what's Friday afternoons for me, Thursday afternoons for you guys, to not get spoiled for Supernatural, because I've now seen that so many people that, before I cared about Supernatural, I didn't really notice, but I've seen that so many people live blog it, that I was like, yeah, it's like I'm at work in the middle of the day, like, it's not even like I could be watching live if I wanted to, you know, and so I've taken to being like, yeah, okay, bye, I'm going to get back on Twitter in 6 hours. And that's really hard for me because I'm really compulsive about Twitter, but I have taken to that with Supernatural to really avoid spoilers.
I have done that before. I'm also a giant Survivor fan. I know, oh. I'm weird. And I will black myself out if I'm stuck at work the night that they do the finales because I don't want to know and nobody can keep their mouth shut. So I literally will turn off social media on my phone's like, nope, no, nothing. I don't look at anything. It's always makes work 2 hours longer that night or feel 2 hours longer. But yeah, that's another one that I'll just black myself out for because it only happens once you find out who wins and then that's, you know, that's part of the fun. So, sigh.
Hmm. Yeah, it's really bad that we're, can't live without the social media, but it is what it is, so whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so my gripe is also about Twitter, kind of. And it actually came from a personal experience, not on Twitter, but my gripe is people giving hate or criticism about a thing directly to that person for no reason, in a really thoughtless way. And let me explain this because it's a little bit of a weird breakdown. At work, I probably can't say too much about it because I don't want to get in trouble should anyone ever get this back to them. But I work at a university, and there is a current campaign for the membership for the student union, as in the advertising for it, the colors, the slogan and stuff like that. That has changed since I've been there. So they've changed their basic, their marketing campaign, the way that the entire membership program looks. And to be frank, it sucks, and I hate it. So does nearly everyone else that works for me. And so do all of the students. And there's a whole big thing about it. And that's whatever. I don't, it doesn't really affect my day-to-day life. But I was on the front desk and some students came along and they were they were doing their membership, but they were bitching out or making fun of the membership design of the desk where I was sitting and stuff like that, right in front of me. And I was like, this isn't my fault. It's not my campaign. And they weren't doing it to me, but it was they were standing there, I wasn't there, bitching out what I was standing for, if you know what I mean. And it was really humiliating, even though it wasn't my problem, if you know what I mean. I don't know if that makes sense, but it just felt really unnecessary. It's go away. If you want to laugh about it, don't put the person working for it, on the spot, if you know what I mean. And so that general attitude, if that makes sense, it kind of transposed to a lot of different elements of fandom and of media as well, because this was a really random personal experience. But it reminds me of when people are on Twitter or on Tumblr or reading fan fiction or whatever, and that they have something negative to say, and that they tag the person or comment on the thing in a way it's not even direct criticism. It's not even hey, so-and-so, I really didn't like you saying that. It's not even a direct hey, I have a bone to pick with you in a way that may or may not be legitimate. It is thoughtless, oh my God, so-and-so looks really ugly in this, or something like that. Where you could just be saying the person's name to express your opinion, but you're choosing to tag them so that they see your comment. It's not hey, @Donya, I really didn't like that you said that. Can you explain that or apologize for it or something? It's hey, God, @Donya looks really stupid in this episode. Why would you do that? Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly
why
what
would you
mean.
Do that? And I see people do it with and it's sometimes I'm do you people not realize that you don't have to tag a person if you're talking about it? Because sometimes the phrasing is oh, I really, because then they're it happened to Neil Gaiman. It happens to him a fair bit that I see. And so someone will be oh, I can't believe that Neil Gaiman, whatever, did, @Neil himself. And then he'll reply and then they'll be oh, I never thought that you would see that. And it's then why did you fucking tag him? I don't... Like, that I don't understand. I do understand having a direct issue, for better or worse, whether you're a dick or whether it's legitimate, and being like, hey, what? Like, you know, asking them a direct question that is a criticism. And people do it with fan fiction as well. People leave really, like, unconstructive comments about how they didn't like a fan fiction on a fan fiction. And it's like, this person sat there and wrote it for free so that other fans could enjoy rolling around in the world of their fandom for a bit longer. It's not like they're getting paid. You have no standards to hold them to. If you didn't like it, that's fine. But why are you telling them that you didn't like it? Like, I don't understand.
You know? Yeah, I've run into this problem a lot. I'd say maybe the last month. I met a friend of a friend. So we have a mutual friend, and she's gone out of the country for a couple of years to study abroad. So we were missing her, and we ended up talking to each other on Twitter and decided to meet up. When we met up, we ended up talking about hockey. And we both like Czech Please. Mm-hmm. So we started talking about it. And she started talking about the ship that she really liked that hadn't really crossed my mind before that point. And suddenly I like fell down that very specific hole and have like been chasing down everything since. So I went into the tag on Tumblr for it, for the ship tag. And I hate ship names like so much.
Which
but that's
ship
another
is
thing.
This, Donya?
Ken Parson and Alexei Meshkov.
Well, see, that's based on zero things, but I have seen that, but it is literally 100% fictional. But yes, anyway, carry on.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is fine, because, like, whatever.
Yeah.
I went onto the tag to look for things, because I was like, I actually really like just the premise of this, and it's really interesting, and I also like Kent a lot.
Yeah.
But, so I go on the tag, and half the tag is actual people, like, talking about what they like, and writing fic, and art, and just discussing with each other, and the other half is people, like, completely rabidly being like, this is the worst thing, you're abuse apologists, and I'm like, they're going, whoa, what?
Yeah, and Kent's tag particularly has a lot of hate in, like, tagged hate in it, which is just,
yeah,
whatever.
But it upsets me a lot, because I'm like, they're going, how, I don't understand how people have read the character like that, because I didn't even realize that this was going on in the background, because I didn't read the character like that
at all. Yeah.
But this whole thing just reminds me of, like, celebrities read the mean tweets and they're almost always tagged in them, and I'm like, why?
Right. But almost half of the mean tweets aren't like legitimate mean tweets either. Yeah. They are like people who
fandom
do the jokey
first.
Kind of like, I'm gonna fight him.
What, Oscar Isaac is a Brooklyn hipster piece of shit and I want to fight him. That's not hate. But I understand. But yeah, and like, fictional characters is one thing, and people, that really does bother people in fandom, because they want to go on their tags and they want to play with the stuff that they like, and then people are in there like yelling at how that they shouldn't like that thing, and so that sucks. But people doing it about real people like on Twitter, tagging, like, random criticism that is, like, just conversational stuff that is not like, hey, Jeremy Renner, why did you say that terrible thing in an interview? You need to apologize for it. That is, like, you know what I mean. But stuff that is, like, incidental, like, oh, I, you know, can't believe that. Expressing, you know, I don't know, I can't even think of one, but expressing a personal opinion about someone that's phrased in a way that is not actually directly wanting to confront them, but still tagging them. What is wrong with you? You can have this terrible negative opinion if you want to, whatever, but why are you inflicting it directly on them? Why are you letting them overhear your meanness? Like, I don't, like, if that's not your intent, unless you're passive aggressively doing it on purpose because you want them to, which apparently doesn't seem to be true when they reply to you and you react to it. And I see it all the time and I don't really understand it. Like, it's so weird.
Yeah.
Anyway. So that is my problem, and it all came from the fact that some teenagers were mean about my workplace while I was sitting right there. And I was like, why? It's humiliating, and I don't understand why people do it. Anyway, that's me. Donya, do you want to do yours now?
Yeah, mine is sort of not oddly specific, but it's something that's kind of like been festering for a while, but kind of has been exacerbated by the fact that an article went up on Variety on the 22nd. Let me scroll back up and see. Yeah, on the 22nd of November. It was from a very, very short interview with Kathleen Kennedy, who is basically heading up Lucasfilm and the Star Wars series right now. And she was talking about, obviously, Rogue One and the upcoming Han Solo spin-off film, the standalone film. And I was just like reading this because I also do a Star Wars podcast, so I kind of have to keep up with like pretty much everything. But one thing in particular, like, really stuck out to me that kind of got my back up and I was like, whoa, what the hell, is that she said, and direct quote, regarding getting a female director behind the camera for Star Wars. She says, "We want to make sure that when we bring a female director in to do Star Wars, they're set up for success. They're gigantic films and you can't come into them with essentially no experience. We want to really start to focus in on people we would love to work with and see what kinds of things they're doing to progress up that ladder now, and then pull them in when the time is right." The double standard in the industry for male and female directors for heading up these so-called, like, franchise films, these big blockbuster movies, and the fact that they trust male directors with it and not female directors, that comment in particular is infuriating, because when you look back over the last year, you can look at Colin Trevorrow, who is going to be doing Star Wars Episode 9. He did Jurassic World, but only after he made Safety Not Guaranteed, which was a very small indie-ish kind of film.
That's a fantastic movie, but yeah, carry on.
Yes, yeah, it is. It is. And the same with, like, Gareth Edwards was only given, like, Godzilla after he made Monsters, and Mark Webb was given Amazing Spider-Man after making, like, 500 Days of Summer. Like, it's...
Well, I was going to say, the guy who's got Spider-Man Homecoming, John Watts, I remember being shocked at his resume, which is nothing. He's made, like, a couple of, like, very small things and commercials. Like, and even the Russo brothers, who I love, like, love, 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 and I will fight people for them, had not done a lot of films. They had done television, like, they had made a very strong mark on television, but very niche. But they had not done anything close to, like, that kind of level of success. Like, that kind of level of big films that, you know, like, the Marvel films. But even less than them, John Watts, who is the director of Spider-Man Homecoming, has done, like, a low-budget horror movie and, I don't know, like, a something else. Like, nothing even close, like, to that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, why are, like, so many directors who are male and don't have a lot of, like, experience to them? Like, or they do, but they're very, very small films. Why are they trusted with being able or deemed ready to then move on?
It's like they trust the talk. Like, they trust the vision of those guys. They trust that they can, they talk the talk, and they trust, people believe in, like, what their vision is going to be, but apparently women have to walk the walk as well. They don't just trust the vision of the women.
Yeah, which is infuriating, because there are so many female directors that I would love to see tackle a Star Wars film. And it just blows my mind that there's this double standard in the Kennedy basically is like, no, they need to they need to get experience. They need to be ready. We need to like make sure that they're coming into this with experience under their belt. And it's like, but why aren't you using that same standard for the guys directing the films?
Yeah,
that's really
like, it reminds me of like Wes Ball. He had done nothing before they handed him Maze Runner. And that movie had like no budget. Like it was fairly small, but ended up doing pretty well for itself. Mm. He had done nothing. He had done 3 shorts before he did that.
Yeah.
It's like, crazy it's that they just, all just trust. Yeah. Oh, I have these ideas. You should like my ideas, which that's great. Like good for them for trusting someone based on their ideas, but how odd to do it for men and not for women.
Yeah. And it just it drives me crazy because even a lot of the people who have directed Star Wars films or even been involved in Star Wars films haven't really had a massive wealth of experience behind the camera anyway. Which is insane to me. Like, the one with the most experience, I think, that has helmed a film is probably J.J. Abrams, yeah. Which is completely bonkers because they're not setting the same standard for, like, everyone. And it's the same with, like, it's the same across, like, everyone. Like, all major kind of franchises. Yeah. I don't know. Because the thing is Patty Jenkins, who's directing Wonder Woman, she's mostly a for TV director before she got Wonder Woman. So it's not that the directors aren't out there. It's just for some reason they're not standing by them. And it's particularly infuriating for me that Kennedy is also a woman heading up Lucasfilm.
Yeah, who should that's the be really in the prime. Shocking.
Yeah, she should be in a prime position to make a difference and to really support other women and give them the chances that they're not being given elsewhere. And yet, she's holding them to a completely different standard to all of the other directors that are currently signed on to make a Star Wars movie.
Yeah, that's the fact that she said that really shocks me, but
Yeah, really rankles. It's like, you should be championing people, like women especially, that want that have an idea, that want to do something different, that, you know, like, come on, what do you have to do? Like, what do you have
like,
to do?
Like, it's a shame that she said, like, and if she actually said, like, if we bring a woman on, we want to make sure of this, like, as opposed to saying that about any, you know, just saying if we bring a director on, even though that's still not true for the directors they're picking, like, it's kind of still a bit miserable, but I don't know, that's so strange. Yeah, it's very, very odd.
It's basically women and men for the same job.
Yeah.
The woman needs to be 10 times as qualified as the man to even be considered an equal.
Well, and there's, so there was this really great quote that was from the creator of Transparent, if you've seen that, the Emmy
Awarding
series, Jill Soloway. So she's a woman. And she was talking about directing, and she was just like, I don't understand how it's a male-dominated industry, basically, like, because this is something that women grow up doing, kids. She was like, we all know how to do it. We fucking grew up doing it. It's dolls. How did men make us think we weren't good at this? It's dolls and feelings, and women are fighting to become directors? What the fuck happened? Because it is. It's someone being like, here's how I want the story to go. You go here and you go here. This is what girls do. Growing up, and boys don't play like that. So how is this like an industry that has become like, it's like cooking. It's like women, like cooking is a feminine art right up until you get the very top. And then when you're a master chef, you have to be a man to be revered, if you know what I mean. But it's like, how did they get there? How did they get to that point? Like, so they surpassed all of the women that have been, you know, traditionally cooking for however, and, you know, and right on the top is the, you know, excellent Michelin-starred male chefs who are, like, the most revered. And this is exactly the same here, like, kind of, in that this is something that kind of mindset of telling those kind of stories is traditionally female play. But apparently there's a point where guys are like, oh, I want to do that, and they don't, like, you know, realize, I guess, that that's actually something that women, you know, some women, like, not everyone plays the same, but, like, that it is a traditionally, on a smaller scale, traditionally female pastime. So it's really strange.
Yeah. I've always thought that about like cooking and the cooking world.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I watch, like, Top Chef is one of my favorite shows, yeah. And it always surprises me when the women, like, the first couple of seasons when the women came on and were like, this is a male-dominated field, and I'm like, really? Like, are you, like, I never realized it, but yeah. You're right. Like, how is this? It makes no sense.
Yeah, like, you know, cooking is, you know, kind of eschewed as this, you know, oh, domestic, feminine, like, no, I don't cook, my wife cooks for me, you know, nonsense, until you get to the very top of the game and you get these professional chefs, which is very male-dominated, and it's like, so what happened in the middle? Like, where? How did that get there? I don't understand. But yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we'll move on to closing up for the episode. We'll do our two truths and a lie. Kristen, are you prepared for this?
Yes. Good. I have two sets of them because I want to make sure I do this right.
Okay.
So I have a set that are more like about me and specifically about like my time in college.
Okay.
And then I have a set that are about like things I've watched or read or haven't watched or read. Which one would you rather have?
Whichever you want. Danya, what do you think?
I feel like the college one will be harder, so let's go with that.
Okay.
Okay, if you
we'll
like.
Go with that then.
So if we're going to get to know Kristen a bit with two truths and a lie.
Okay, here we go. So, I originally went to college as a music major. I took a class in college called Reading Harry Potter. And I saw Rocky Horror for the first time in college.
Oh. These are hard.
I want to say that Rocky Horror is the lie just for reasons. I don't know why. I want to say that Harry Potter is true, though. So I think I'm going to say that Rocky Horror is the lie. And I wouldn't have a clue about the major. So I'm going to say Rocky Horror is the lie because that you saw it before that.
I think I'm probably leaning towards Rocky Horror as well. I can't remember if we had a conversation once about your major, though, because something's telling me that that one is definitely true.
Hmm.
Well.
All right, how did we do?
Yeah. You did fabulously. Yes. I originally went to college as a music major. I was a vocal performance major.
Wow.
Yeah. I lasted about a year. I think I lasted a whole year. And I just didn't have the diva attitude that everyone else in the program had. And I was never going to compete. So I stepped out of that, changed it to film, which the program at my college, the film program, leaves a lot to be desired. So I ended up finally changing it to popular culture, and that's what I graduated with. So, yeah, I was a music major at one point. And then, yes, I did take a class called Reading Harry Potter. It was awesome. It was right before the seventh book came out, I believe. So we read the seventh book in that class. Like, we had to read it to do our final papers or something. It was really cool.
What a shame.
And I wrote a paper about, like, celebrity status in the Harry Potter world, and, like, we did character analysis and all kinds of stuff. It was really fun, though, and it was, a literature course just based on Harry Potter rather than other things. And then I saw Rocky Horror back, like, my freshman year of high school. I was this little innocent freshman who knew nothing about the world, and a senior in my drama class, like, took me under her wing and was like, we're gonna be friends. And she took me to her house one night and we sat down and watched it, and my world was blown apart. Like, that movie is insane. So yeah, no, that's a little bit about me and college time in
Yay.
college.
Cool. So we've got a question of the day, and we've also got a little bit of general feedback to discuss before we finish up. So the main one, we got two from Nurse Brack, who is a guy, I think he's in the UK. He's a pretty dedicated follower of our shows, so I like to hear from him. But he asked this one a while ago and I didn't use it, and then asked it again. So we're going to use it today, and he had another one which was really good that I'd like to use in the future. But the question of the day today is there something everyone you know is into but that you just can't be bothered with, even though you think you might like it? So anyone got an answer to that, like, immediately? Because I have a couple.
Yeah, there's always a couple. The two that jump out at me right now are two TV shows. It's Community and Breaking Bad. I have friends who have watched both who think and know that I would love both of them, but I can't get into it. There's something about it. Like, I've watched the first episode of Breaking Bad and the first couple of episodes of Community, and I can't seem to break the threshold and get excited about it. So maybe someday, but yeah.
I love Community, but mine is Gilmore Girls. Mine is
yeah.
So it's like timely. I've just been like, okay, ? About this entire Gilmore Girls experience. I did watch two scenes in the revival, like both sent to me by Brittany. Can you guess which two scenes I watched in Gilmore Girls, Kristen?
Oh, geez. What would she have sent you? God, I just watched it last night. I mean, I have no idea. was it the one of, like, the two girls, or Lorelai and Rory, like, at the pool?
No, both completely contextless. I'll just fill you in for that. So, one was the entire scene of the musical, actors are famous Broadway actors who we both love, Sutton Foster and Christian Borle. Sutton, I believe, was not only a very big Gilmore Girls fan, but worked on another one of Amy Sherman Palladino's shows, and so they got them in to, like, do that, whatever that was. That I watched, and then I watched Jared's scene, like the Dean scene in the final episode.
Oh, duh. As well. Yes. Okay.
So those are the two parts of Gilmore Girls I've seen. I believe I once saw one episode randomly on TV that involved the posh boyfriend, like Logan, at some point, because he looked really familiar. But I don't know. I don't think it's for me. I don't know. It's the way they talk is, I know, a big appeal to a lot of people, but I also think that I would hate Rory too much to watch, like, that many seasons of her. But I don't know. And then Supernatural was another big one that I, like, lots of people I knew watched, and no one ever recommended it to me. Apparently everyone, like, was just, like, keeping it on the down low. But again, for 10 years it was Supernatural, and now it's obviously not. Another really big one is probably the Harry and Draco ship in Harry Potter, which has always been a massive ship for people that I never really, really understood or got into. But, yeah.
Prior to rewatchable, I could have added Buffy to my list, but
now you're stuck
I'm
with
currently
it.
Fixing that.
Yeah.
For me, same Gilmore Girls. A few people have basically said to me it's something that you would really like, because I really like slice of life shows, and stuff like that. But for some reason, the more people try and get me to watch it, the more I'm like, no, I don't want to. The other two are book series. One is Captive Prince book series.
Oh, really?
Which two people have told me that I would really love it, one of whom has lent me the series, and it's still sitting on my bookshelf, and I still haven't picked it up, and I don't know why. I just, for some reason, I can't bring myself to, like, read it, even though, like, they're like, no, it's basically everything that you would
Captive
love.
Prince is an interesting, I've a lot of odd thoughts about Captive Prince, but go on.
Okay. Yeah, and the other one is Raven Boys and the Raven Cycle books. I tried reading the first one, and I got about a third of the way in before I had to put it down out of, like, sheer frustration.
That's really interesting to me, because obviously you know that I really, really love them.
Yeah.
And part of why I really love them is that they're, like, the most readable books that I've, for my personal taste, that I've ever read. Like, I like them more than I like Harry Potter. They are my favourite book series of all time. So I'm really curious about what frustrated you.
The bit that started frustrating me was, like, the mythology part of it, I guess. The whole, where they were going with the sort of mythology of it. And I was just, that was driving me crazy.
I have also started and stopped the first Raven Boys book. I was listening to the audiobook at work.
I don't like the audiobooks, just by the way. Yeah. I don't like the reader. So I know that the author really loves them. Like, Maggie really loves that Will Patton reads them, but I don't like the reader of the audiobooks.
Yeah. I actually, like, I was just having trouble following the story with his, like, with his voice and how he was doing the voices for different characters. And so
I hate it.
It was just very alienating. Like, I didn't connect with any of the characters. I didn't really, you know, dive into it like I thought I would. I figured someday I'd pick up the paperback and, like, give it a chance, like, actually reading it. And I'm sure it would probably be better, but yeah, I was just not a fan.
I tried going back to it twice. And I may give it a third try.
I will say this about the Raven Cycle. The first book is, I liked it. I was hooked straight away. But I admit that there is weirdness. If you get to the second book, the point of view characters change. And that is when you will love it, if you don't already. I can nearly guarantee that. And you don't have to read it. It's fine. I'm bit confused about the mythology in particular, and a lot of what there is about the mythology is not what you expect. Like, the end result of what happens is not the full, not necessarily the fulfillment of what you expect. But there is, there is a lot that you don't understand at that point in the book. They're also designed specifically to reward the reread. Like, they're very complex and that you're meant to go back and find things later. But if you get to the second book, the point of view characters change, and that is when you will really, really get hooked, in my opinion. But you don't have to either, because I'm also very protective of them, and I don't want anyone to read them that isn't 100% on board with it, basically.
the basic premise of it is, like, everything that I know I probably would love, and I don't understand why I can't pinpoint it exactly why. I just don't connect with it at all, because it pulls on so much stuff that I love. And it kind of drives me crazy when something is like everything. It has all of the elements of something that I know I'm going to love. And yet for some reason, I'm just not connecting with it in the way that I hoped I would.
Feel free to leave it alone in that case, or otherwise, if you can go into it with the trust of you don't understand what's going on and that the end result is not going to be what you think, and get to the point of the second book and get into the heads of some of the other characters, you will, I'm pretty sure that you'll like it, but you don't have to. Okay, so that was our question of the day. We also have another one which I would like to use at a different point, which I will reveal later. A little bit of general feedback. We have a few tweets from people. I just included this one from Mai that she sent a little while ago, saying this is at underscore unforgiven. Who is one of our good podcasting buddies. It says, as I know you're all waiting in suspense, I'm catching up on the weather and enjoying it immensely. You're good eggs. That's good. We need her approval. As long as she's listening, we can just have her as a listener and no one else, and that's fine. Then there's another one from Geraldine94, who said, listening to at NATW podcast, so I'm not hysterically crying about the How to Get Away with Murder this was tweeted at, right after that mid-season finale. At Shonda Rhimes, you outdid yourself. I'm so sad. So I assume that this was to do with this death that you mentioned, Kristen. I did look this up. I'm like, why is she sad? I don't know this show. And I went and looked it up.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty tragic and not something I thought was going to happen. Yeah. They basically had gone through the first half of the season and eliminated one person at a time, someone who wasn't the dead body. And then you come to find out that maybe all those people that you thought were all safe may not have been safe to begin with. Like, someone, you know, like, it was more of a surprise than we all thought it was going to be. So it just, yeah, it was rough. I'm with you.
Geraldine also said, I'm so excited about, not about the weather, because I'd miss Natalie Fisher and at Karen Rort so much if they just stopped, which I believe Karen told her that they would not be able to stop us and they would have to force us to stop. But hopefully you like some of our other hosts as well and get to know us a little bit more, but thank you for listening to the other show as well. And then Joseph Douglas Watson, JD Boy 2000, says, how virtual Don, that's Donya, talks about Voltron is great. I haven't seen it yet, but her passion makes me smile. Well, that's nice. That's what we're here for, to excite you about things that maybe you don't know about yet.
Born so, Voltron.
Yeah. and then this, we had an Anon on Tumblr who said, I'm usually one to, this is throwing back to when Brittany talked about not wanting people to talk to her about the stuff that she was watching, basically. So saying, I'm usually one to enjoy things passively and not engage online, but I relate so much to episode 4 of this show. I have the exact same feeling about Gilmore Girls. I work in retail and I'm so afraid that someone will spoil something Gilmore Girls related while I'm stuck at work and I'll be devastated. Gilmore Girls was what made me feel okay as a loner in high school who valued education more than popularity. I still look to the Gilmore Girls as examples of strong women. This is more of a vent than an ask. So yes, that ties both back into one of our former episodes and what Kristen was saying today about the you know, the online interactions and the spoilers and stuff. So yeah, and I've sent Brittany your message and she will write up a reply to you as well at some point. So yeah, that's our little bit of feedback for today. And if you want to reach out to ask us a question on air to either, hashtag ANA, which is ask not about the weather anything, question of the day, you can send an ask on notaboutheweatherpodcast.com or reach out on NATW podcast on Twitter or Facebook. And also, if you've enjoyed the podcast so far, you can give us 5 stars on iTunes so that it, like, bumps us up to the status of, like, a legitimate podcast that has reviews that actually comes up when you Google it. If you Google Not About the Weather, we do now come up on Google. So that's exciting. That was exciting for me to check, because for the first, like, few weeks, we were not coming up on Google, and now we do. So that's
good. We're ranking in Google searches.
Yeah, so that's good. But, yeah, if you want to rate us, that would be awesome. And then, yeah, so that this has been us. Kristen is you know, been a great fun guest, so if she ever wants to contribute again, she's more than welcome. You've passed the test, Kristen.
Yay!
There was no test. There's no test.
Yeah.
But hopefully you've enjoyed yourself.
Definitely. Yeah. No, absolutely. It was fun, and I'd be happy to come back anytime you want me to.
Yay! All right. So Kristen is part of our podcasting family, and then next week, coming up, we will have actually an interview with a writing guest, which I'm very excited about, which I'll reveal to you as soon as I've actually got it in the can, because I'm always paranoid about things not happening when I've set them up to happen. So that's going to be really good. Brittany and I are going to do that because it's actually really relevant to something with her as well. And then, yeah, we'll be carrying on, and soon it'll be Christmas and then New Year's and all of those things. So yay! All right. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Good grim. Let me see how that did.
Some stuff fell off my desk, and in the pile in the desk
why are you
were
not
my
doing
tickets
it?
For Godspell and How to Succeed in Business. That's from a while ago.
Does yeah, how long has that pile been on your desk, Donya?
I was cleaning stuff up in my office, funnily enough, yesterday. I got back from, I went to like a really shitty local comic con thing. You know, when they're like, they put them on and you walk into it and you realize it's just a load of tables with people selling shit and some person that you vaguely remember from walking behind in the background of a show that one time,
yeah.
Sitting in the corner like, hey guys!
I once went to a comic con in Wrexham in Wales, Donya, if that tells you anything about it, because it had some people from Torchwood there, and we were like, yeah, let's go. And while the Torchwood people were quite good, the Comic Con was very sad.
Terrible. Yeah, it's that there's a staple of them across the UK, and they're very local. Unfortunate.
It's mean that we say that, because that's like what they, I mean, that's how it sort of used to be like with the big cons as well, and some people are mad that it's not like that anymore, you know, like some people are mad yeah. that it's like not more, you know, literal comic sellers and stuff just getting together yeah. to sell comics.
I would have been a little bit more okay with it if, like, there were a few, like, local comic artists, so they were, like, celebrating those, but there was literally no one there. There were just a few tables with people selling stuff on it, and I'm just, like, there going, you could have put in a little bit of effort.
Oh, well. You tried, and then they
criticize you. Little sticker with a star. Okay. Oh, dear.